What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the You Know Ball podcast. I am your host, Trill Brodude, and today we are talking about the Ben Simmons situation for the first time in quite some time. But before I get to all that stuff, tomorrow night, Thursday, November 18th, 2021, just in case you're listening in 2022 for some reason, we will be at the Henry James Saloon in Roxborough for the first You Know Ball live podcast. I hope you can make it out. We're going to be doing it during Sixers Nuggets. We're going to be talking. You can come out, air your grievances that you might have with the team, with Daryl Morey, with Ben Simmons, with Doc Rivers, with anything going on with this situation. If you want to come out, hop on the mic, spit some of your takes. I'm going to be there all night. We'll have the third mic open all night. My buddy Emart is going to be hosting with us during the event. So me and him will just be talking about the game and the Sixers in general. And then you can come out and just talk to us and hang out and drink beers and eat food and say what up. So we hope you can come out. Obviously, Joel Embiid will not be playing in this game, so we should just be messing around mostly the whole time. It won't be too serious since Joel, I won't imagine it will be that competitive. So we'll just be having fun with it. And we'll be all miserable together, basically. So hopefully you can make it out. Once again, that's Henry James Saloon in Roxborough, right near D'Alessandro's. If you can't make it out and you can support in any other way, leave a 5-star review on your podcast platform or donate in the square below. So once again, thank you. I'll keep it brief. It was good to have Mike back on to talk about the Ben Simmons situation, and enjoy this episode. We work to work, you late to work, I holla and they send it. You know my pride was colder than Chicago in December. My bitch came up in Inco with her mama, was her daddy. And when I'm in the Midwest, she say holla at your family. My dog paid me that cup, taste like candy. My dog out laying them law, ain't breaking the laws, out serving out the rock. Southside still fucking in the car, still flipping in the car, still shooting at the car. Still hot, but I smoke. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the You Know Ball podcast. I am your host, Tro Bro Dude, and today, making his, I don't know, maybe fourth appearance on the podcast, I think fourth sounds about right, is my buddy Mike Chiotto from Twitter, and I finally pronounced his name right. What's going on, Mike?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So I don't really know what to make of the last few games. I want to talk about it a little bit up top just because obviously Sixers are on a 6-game skid now, right? Is it 6 or is it 5?
5. It will be
5. Okay. It will. Yeah, I'm already factoring in the loss tomorrow night against the Nuggets, which is great. Great to do already. Mm-hmm. But so what do you make of the last few games that they've lost? Obviously, they've lost to some pretty good teams, and they competed for a while there, but kind of caught up with them last night against the Jazz as they got blown out in Utah.
Yeah, there's not much to take away. I mean, the Bucks and the Knicks games were both – they should have gotten blown out in both of those games, and they just – I think the home crowd and just pure general adrenaline kept them in that game. They hit some shots. The Raptors game – I mean, I think they win that game if the Drummond block thing doesn't happen.
Yeah.
The Pacers game is the one game I think you can get, like, they should have won that game.
Yeah.
That was there. That was winnable. And it's tough to say they should have won that game because they're still very shorthanded. But when you look about the situation and all the – if you don't win that game, it's going to turn – it's like a 7-8 game losing streak. And they didn't. And it's going to be minimum 6, probably 7.
Yeah, I mean, when they get back home after this road trip, they're probably going to be under 500 unless
– which is crazy, but – and it's tough to get mad about, but like
– yeah, I mean
– 8-2 to like 9-10 is brutal.
Yeah, obviously the most concerning thing is Joel's health, and you just hope that he's okay from everything that's going on with his COVID diagnosis and everything. But it's also like the most Sixers thing ever to have him get diagnosed with this and get it right before – you know, this long streak of hard games that they would have. And obviously this is something that me and you touched on before the season. I mean, it was or early in the season where we talked about, like, if Embiid is out, this team is going to be very bad unless they get good shooting luck like they did in the Portland game.
Yeah, I mean, probably the worst time for this to happen, like the entire season, where you've got the tough home games and then you go out west for 6 games against tough teams. like, if you look at the schedule 2 weeks from now when they come home and they've got, like, Orlando, Minnesota, and a couple other easy teams, if it happened then, it still would have been bad, but you probably wouldn't be able to survive. You're not going to be able to survive with this schedule.
Yeah, so, you would have been able to steal a few of those games, which is what I was like. I like to see the fact that they were competing in those in the Knicks game and the Bucks game. Very encouraging, 100% encouraging. To even the Pacers game, like the Raptors game, like the fact that they competed down to the wire of those games is a very good sign for when Joel Embiid comes back. But the frustrating thing is that they couldn't steal like more than or any games from that stretch. Yeah, like they weren't able to just.
That you really needed to steal one of the Bucks or Knicks games, I think, because those were right there. And, like, in both games, I felt like they were, like, one stop away from taking control, and they just could never get it. And then the Raptors and Pacers game. Like I said going into it, if they could split Bucks-Knicks and then split Raptors-Pacers, they could tread water.
Yeah.
And they don't. Now they go out west on a four-game losing streak, and it's going to spiral here.
It just will spiral.
Like, they were never going to Utah and winning.
And of all the games I wanted to win, the one I wanted to win the most was the Raptors because of everything that has happened with Raptors fans over the past year and Sixers fans.
Especially because Maxi went off. I mean, the one positive is that Raptors fans can't, or any fans cannot say anything to us because we got them beat out. Like last night, we lost to the got lost by 30 to the Jazz. Under any other circumstance, we lost by 30 to the Jazz. Just terrible.
But we would be getting absolutely killed today. But But also, like, I heard people bringing up the fact that, like, oh, well, last year they lost to the – or they almost beat the Jazz in Utah, came down to the wire without Joel. But it also took a monster – literally the best game of Ben Simmons' career.
42 points.
Which is just – he's never scored more than, like, 35 before that. Mm. And then – people also forget that, like, Tobias was hitting pull-up threes in that game and, like, had – I think he had 35. Like, that was just, like, a really outlier performance from Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons that kept them in that game. And yes, of course, I think having Ben Simmons for this stretch might have made it a little bit easier to steal a game or two. But ultimately, right now, Daryl Morey is saying, I want Ben Simmons to play, and he's not playing. So I don't really know what – the team could do other than do you think that they should just like send him home at this point and just be like,
I think they just send him home and say, we'll pay you and just, you know, we'll come back on December 15th for visit or whatever, but he's not going to play here. It's just obvious. Like he'll come up like, if he says he's not mentally well, then he can just say that for as long as he wants. And
yeah, it's that
you can't force him to play.
Bulletproof, like bulletproof.
They cannot force him to get on the court.
Yeah,
and even if he does, like I don't think he's not going to try.
No,
and Ben Simmons not giving effort is not like James Harden not giving effort.
Yeah, exactly. Ben Simmons, the reason why he was a good regular season player is because he gave effort all the time. If he does not give effort,
if he's suddenly like a bad defender, he's a bad player.
Yeah, overall. So I mean. Ultimately, what the Sixers situation that they have now is I'm kind of getting to that point, too. At first, I was like, well, maybe you just see if you can have him come in until December 15th and do whatever. But now it's like this obviously isn't going to resolve itself. The Sixers are only going to – regardless of how you feel about the situation and whatever's going on with Ben and what he's saying and stuff like that, like the Sixers don't look good in this. Like it's not like they're like the victors of the situation. Like.
Yeah.
It's not a great look, regardless of how you feel about the Sixers or how you feel about Ben. You might as well just tell them to go home, sit and find a trade. And like any leverage that you think that you might lose in that situation, well, you probably already lost that anyway. Because right now, as you said, if he comes back, he might not try. And if he does try, it's not like you're going to get this. It's not going to change from getting a superstar to not getting a superstar or vice versa. Like Ben Simmons trade value is what it is right now. And until someone comes on the market that is better that, or someone gets traded and the market changes, that's just going to kind of how it is.
Yeah. The Simmons' trade value is almost entirely dependent on the other team, you know, what their panic level is, how much they want Simmons. It's not on Simmons. And this is what I said like a couple months ago. I'm not sure what Morey was expecting. Like he wasn't going to come here and here and play well. Like even if he did play, like And even adding him, even if Simmons tomorrow was like, I'm tired of getting fined, I'll play. That's not like, it's not going to be like you're adding like Ben Simmons of last year.
Like, yeah. Or two years ago, when he was locked in and he felt like it was, you know, he was a big part of the team.
It's very hopeless for, I don't know what their thinking is with Simmons. I think it's partly because there's probably like people in the league telling them like not to give in or whatever, but.
Like right. There's pressure from other front offices, I'm sure, because it's like first off, it's not Daryl Morey's job to like worry about setting a bad precedent or whatever. Like that's something that Steve Lippman from Liberty Ballers, who I've had on the podcast before, pointed out in his article yesterday, which is basically like, look, like I don't care if it sets a bad precedent. Like you have to do what's best for the team and you have to do what's best for the return value on Ben Simmons. And also, what if he comes back and gets injured? Like, there's a world of possibilities where, like, the upside to Ben Simmons coming back definitely does not outweigh the fact that, you know, it could have massive downside. Massive downside. Yeah. And that's kind of why we're here today. We're going to talk a little bit just about, like, have, like, a temperature check around the league. One thing before we move on, it sounded like Kristen Ledlow from TNT did some reporting on this. During the game yesterday, she said that in the Sixers front office and management group, there is basically there's a split opinion on what the Sixers should do. Some people say, let's ride it out. Let's, you know, try to get him to come back and play. Let's try to hold out. And other people are like, let's just move on. Let's find a trade. Let's do it. Obviously, that's going to get a lot easier in 1 month from now on December 15th when like a third of the league can be traded that signed this past offseason or was traded in some capacity. And then from there, more people in January that signed extensions, like not that this is going to happen, but for example, like Marcus Smart signed his extension, he could be traded in January. So we're going to do a little temperature check around the league on teams that are interested in Ben Simmons. I didn't include the Celtics or the Raptors in here because I don't really think that their interest level is legitimate to the point where it's not stuff that we've already discussed. So like, if you want to listen my opinion on the Jaylen Brown episode, go listen to the Jaylen Brown episode. I don't think that's real, although I have heard whispers from people, not that I have like sources or anything, but I've heard whispers from people that like if the Sixers made a trade for Jaylen Brown, it would have to be Ben Simmons plus a lot of stuff. So like,
yeah, just what I would assume.
There is a certain point where the Celtics might be interested, but like, realistically, you would probably have to include Tyrese Maxey and picks and all that. And I don't think that the Sixers are willing to do that for anyone but Damian Lillard and or whoever else, that all NBA player that's out there that could become available. So, the funniest part about all this, though, if that is true, I don't know if it's 100% true, but if that is true, like, you could have just drafted Maxey last year. You had the 14th pick in the draft.
Ness Naismith over him.
Which I know it's a new front office, but like at the time it looked, that was not a good pick. Yeah, like, I mean, everyone who follows the draft said that was bad.
Maxey dropping at 21 is still insane. Like, I don't know how that happened.
Like, every smart draft person, and it's not even like the draft Kentucky people that Lord. Like, yeah, exactly. Like a high recruit Kentucky guard who, like, how many times have we heard this story, folks? How many times do we need to hear the Devin Booker, the Tyler Hero, like, every time a Kentucky guard goes there, they're underutilized. Like, I even heard he's a wing, but like BJ Boston is like showing some flashes now with the Clippers, and he dropped to the second round. Like, and the funny thing is at the time of that, it wasn't even like niche draft Twitter people were saying this. Like, big, like Mike Schmitz from ESPN said Tyrese Maxey was a top 10 pick. Yeah, and like,
he wasn't bad at Kentucky. Like, he wasn't he underwhelmed, but he wasn't bad.
No. And the shooting questions would be answered if you did any research.
Yeah. If COVID doesn't happen and there's a tournament, he definitely doesn't drop to 21.
Oh, 100%. I think he goes top 10 easy because he's at least going to have a game or two in the tournament that shows his upside, which he has shown so far this year. But we're going to move on to actually, this is a good transition because the first team we're going to talk about is an interesting team that it seemed like there were two teams that were really like knocking on the door for Ben Simmons this offseason. And I think this is one of the teams that was, and that's the Sacramento Kings. So The Kings have kind of done what the Kings do, which is underwhelmed to start the season. I mean, they had a hot start, and then they crashed for a little bit. They beat the Pistons the other night, so I believe right now they're about 5-8. They might be 6-8. Yeah, I could be off on that. 6-8. Okay. So basically a report comes out that Luke Walton, the worst coach in the NBA, is on the hot seat, and I'm absolutely shocked that this has happened. And basically that the De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton relationship in the starting lineup has been a little iffy, which is weird because those guys played like most of their minutes together last year. Halliburton was just coming off the bench. But the report from Sam Amick of The Athletic basically has said that things aren't going great there. So one, do you think that the Kings could be the team that would just pay for Ben Simmons, and what would they be willing to pay for Ben Simmons?
I think they would be, because like you said, they were very interested during the offseason and things are not going well, which is not surprising. But for what they will be, I think it would probably be one of their guards. It would be Halliburton or Fox. I don't know which one. I mean, I don't follow the Kings on a day in, day out basis. But I would guess they probably want Fox for Ben and a couple of, and some other stuff. That's my guess.
Yeah. So I know, do you know Coach Thorpe that goes on Zach Lowe's podcast sometimes? Yeah. I know him because he was big on Maxi pre-draft, and I follow his stuff a little bit. And one of the things that he said was he's friendly with Daryl Morey. Like, he knows Daryl pretty well. And he said there's no chance in hell that Daryl Morey would ever do a package based around Tyrese Halliburton for Ben Simmons.
That never really made sense to me, considering all the other leaks that we got that they were looking for a star. Like, Halliburton's a good player, but he's a role player.
Right, a very good role player. Like, I've envisioned Halliburton as like one of those that might be like an analytical darling that like is like, oh, well, actually, like when Danny Green was like considered like, oh, he's like a top 20 player or whatever. And it's like, well, he's the fourth or fifth starter on a really good team, and his job is to do X, Y, and Z, or Lonzo Ball type. Kind of, I know that they get compared a lot because they kind of have similar awkward kind of games, but like kind of in that role where it's like a guy who's a plus passer, a plus shooter, and can handle a little bit, can defend a little bit, but like is not like a super athletic like guy that has these elite level skills that is going to like become a star. So like I've always seen Halliburton as more like a fourth guy on a title team, which is fine if you have – that's what I joked the other day. I was like, oh, great. The Kings got the fourth guy on a title team. All they need is 1, 2, and 3 now. Like
Halliburton, like he'd be a good fit here. But like you said, he's like the fourth guy on a title team, and we don't have a two.
Yes. Or even
close to it, too. I mean, Maxi hopefully could develop into that eventually.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, like, does the Maxi thing – I think – I still see Maxi as, like, a three on a title team. Like, I still see him and I could see maybe in the right world where you get the right second guy, Tobias, being the three on a title team. But what it comes down to is when will Maxi get to the point where he can be that guy? Because it's probably not this year. It's definitely not this year. But it could be. He could be maybe fourth, fifth, whatever. And do you think if the Fox thing were real? So let's say, like, I think the Kings would be better with Ben Simmons instead of De'Aaron Fox. I like Fox. I think as an offensive engine, he's actually a pretty good offensive engine. And his defense is very bad. But, like, you can figure that out probably in the right situation. But if the Sixers made that trade, do you think that the Maxi Fox backcourt would be untenable?
No, I think it could. I think it would work. I think they're both good enough players. It would work. It's a weird fit. Fox is, like I said, during the offseason and even more so now, like, I'm not that big on Fox. Like, he's a very good player. And if it's like the Kings came to me right now, it's like, Simmons for Fox, take it or leave it, I take it.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be more like a stepping stone move where you trade for Fox and then in a couple months you're like trying to flip Fox and other stuff for a bigger star.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of a good way to look at it. I mean, like, I think that they're kind of the same tier of player, Ben and Fox. I think that
I think Simmons would probably take the Kings into, like, maybe competing for a play-in spot range.
Yeah. Yeah, but absolutely.
Playoff.
And maybe they just look at, like, Fox and say, well, he can do that too. He can get us to the 10 seed. Like, why are we trading for Ben Simmons? But I do wonder if the league might agree a little bit more with your opinion on Fox, which is, like, if he's going to be a lead guard, which is kind of what he's been, then he needs to be able to shoot more consistently. Because in the modern NBA, if you're a lead guard and you can't shoot consistently, and I know the irony of this is we're talking about trading him for Ben Simmons, but ultimately the Kings, as I said, like, they don't have a guy who could be a top three guy on a contender. And unless you view Fox that positively. And I view it like, I think that Fox, maybe in the right situation, I don't see it with the Sixers, just because I think that the Sixers are very dependent on having outside shooting with Joel Embiid. Pick and roll partner with De'Aaron Fox, preferably, is what kind of unlocks his game. He works really well with Rashawn Holmes. I just look at it like, I think it's a lateral move for both teams. And I think that the Sixers at this point, especially with Fox's bad start, would probably just say, you know what, we're good. We'll wait. And like, because the risk is you take on Fox and then you're stuck with Fox and Tobias's contract if they're both not max players on a max deal.
Yeah, I think they probably eventually, if it came to it, like the deadline and it was like, we're keeping Simmons or we're trading Simmons for Fox, I think they trade Simmons for Fox. But right now, I think people, there was points where, like, it felt like people were putting Fox in, like, the, like, not the Beal Lillard tier, but, like, the tier right below it.
Right.
And that never really made sense to me. Like, he's a good player, but if he played in, like, I don't know, like, New York instead of Sacramento, he'd be viewed a lot differently. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
We don't see him play a lot in Sacramento. He's a good player, but he's not, like, some star in the making.
Yeah, he occasionally has hot shooting nights, which make his numbers look really good. But ultimately, the way that De'Aaron Fox kind of hits his ceiling as a player is if he becomes a more reliable jump shooter. And so far in his career, he's been incredibly streaky. He's had certain seasons where he shot the ball pretty well, and he's had certain seasons where he really has not shot the ball well at all. And I feel like now he's 23, 24 years old, like, he's probably at the point where he basically is what he is. He might maybe make another mini leap, but, like, I don't see him becoming, like, a perennial all-star player. I think he'll probably always be stuck in that sub all-star tier. And that's kind of why I bring up the Tobias thing, because it's like, Tobias is a good player who will always be stuck in that sub all-star tier of player unless some random hot shooting streak happens. Like, the closest he got was last year, and he's probably never going to get there again.
Yeah, like you said, with Fox developing, I feel like the only way he could really take his game to the next level is with the more consistent shot. And if what? It's year five for him, I think?
Yes.
If it hasn't happened at this point and he still is inconsistent as he is, it's unlikely to happen.
Yep. And very good. Once again, good player. I do wonder if the Sixers would view him a little bit less than the average fan would. And as you said, he's never been to the playoffs. Those kind of players tend to struggle deeper into the playoffs, as we know.
If you're trading for Fox, like, you can't expect De'Aaron Fox in his first playoff run, like, going right at, you know, Brooklyn with Durant and Harden. We're gonna go win that series. Like, you're not.
Yeah. So, kind of going back to what you said, one of the things that people have been reporting recently is Daryl Morey would be willing to keep Ben Simmons through the trade deadline. And if that is the case, I am fully out on Daryl Morey as the GM of the Sixers.
Yeah, that would be absolutely ridiculous.
You cannot waste the age 28 prime season of Joel Embiid's career. And I understand why you would say that and why you would potentially do it. But, like, you have to treat every single Embiid prime year like it is you're going all in. And if you're not going all in, then you might have missed your opportunity. to win a title in general. So the next 3 years, even if you don't make the perfect trade, it doesn't matter quite as much as it does every single year.
Whatever the best offer, if they don't trade him until the deadline, like whatever the best offer is at the deadline, you have to just take it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of what the situation that with the Kings right now. I would say, like, I'd give the Kings like a 50% chance that they just say fuck it and try to make a trade for Ben, whether it's Fox and stuff or if it's like, to me, it would have to be Fox and stuff. And like, I don't think the Kings would be willing to do that.
They'd want Ben and stuff in the
right.
I think that was actual report in the offseason. It's like a hang up. Like the Kings wanted Ben and stuff, and the Sixers wanted Fox or Haliburton and stuff.
Right. Yeah. So that doesn't really seem all that realistic, but I would say they're still towards the top of teams that should be interested in Ben Simmons. I mean, when they said this offseason that Haliburton wasn't even on the table, I was like, well, then just why are we even talking to them? Like, come on, dude. Like, is Tyrese Haliburton young Steph Curry? Like, what are we doing here? Okay, so let's move on to the next team that is kind of falling apart right now. We say as the Sixers are on a 5-game losing streak or 6-game losing streak. The Minnesota Timberwolves, who seemed like the most logical choice for a trade for Ben Simmons in this past offseason, they've had a little bit of a rough start, as they have for the past 20 seasons, because that's what the Timberwolves do. Yeah. And, Kat obviously is getting frustrated with losing there. So what do you make of the situation with Kat? And what do you make of the situation with, like, do you think that – I'll just put it like this. Shashin Gupta, their new president of basketball operations, is a Maury Hinkie guy. Mm-hmm. And he knows that, like, obviously keeping Karl Anthony Towns should probably be a priority. But if Karl Anthony Towns wants out, I think that he knows that he can build a very good team around Anthony Edwards and what he's shown so far. And especially with that D'Angelo Russell contract on the books, that it's going to be very hard to build a team around Kat and Ant right now. So what do you make of that situation? And do you think it's possible that they move on from Kat before the deadline, and that kind of sets everything off in terms of like the trade market?
Sorry, your audio cut out.
No, you're good. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I got it.
You good?
Yeah, hang on. Let me just...
Yeah.
All right. So, Minnesota. They are, like, really a disaster. I've seen some people say, like, well, Timberwolves are going to panic now. It's like, okay, they've been panicking for the last 20 years. the Towns thing is weird because if you watch him play, like, he is really not trying, like, much at all. And if I were the Timberwolves, like, Towns is a great player, but he's kind of settled into like 25th to 30th best player in the league instead of like a top 10 superstar like we thought he was going to be.
Yep.
I don't think he's a guy where it's like with the Blazers with Dame, it's like there's no way you could ever trade a guy like Damian Lillard unless he asked out. I don't think Towns is on that level. Like, you could definitely – it's clear that's not going to work. It's just a matter of when.
In the Anthony Edwards window especially, yeah. I feel like. Yeah. Like, that's – like, if you think Ant can be the best player on a title team and you think that Kat could be the second best player, their timelines aren't going to line up anyway. By the time Kat's got 3 years left on his deal, and, like – the signs have been there for like 2 years now that he's getting frustrated.
Yeah, I think the only thing keeping him there is Russell. Like, because they always wanted to play together and they never really have gotten a shot because of injuries and stuff. Like, this is really their first year, full year, like, at their full healthy and going. So I think that's the one thing where it's like, well, we can't request a trade. Like, I want to play with D'Angelo Russell and try to make it work.
Right.
That's just, they could get a ton for Kat, like a ton. And I think if I were a Timberwolves fan, like, I want them to do it. Like, just pull the plug.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of people in Minnesota are starting to feel that now. I don't think that the team is quite good enough around Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns for them to really get to even the play-in tournament. Like I said that before the season, I still feel that way. I feel like D'Angelo Russell has been consistently one of the most overrated players in the NBA, although yeah, I think his rep is finally catching up with him this year.
It sucks for
where people are starting to realize it.
Cat's two best friends, and it's Russell and Booker, and they got Russell.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Suns happened to get really good the year after that happened, and it made it so that Booker is completely out of their range. Now, a few people have floated this out there, but do you think that – funny that you bring that up. Do you think there's any possibility that, like, maybe Cat gets traded and Ayton and stuff is the return? Like,
I think that's the most likely – like, that's been – I've kind of thought that was the thing for a couple of years now. Like, Cat going to the Suns for Ayton and
picks. And
I always said like Ayton and Bridges, but I don't even think they have to include Bridges. But like Ayton and picks and Cam Johnson or
some else they have. One of the
And if you remember, the Suns said like they didn't, part of the reason they didn't give Ayton that contract was they wanted to keep the door open to trade him.
Yep. So Cat would kind of fit that mold perfectly in terms of being, being like a number two or three on that team with Chris Paul and Devin Booker. The thing about the Mikal Bridges thing, though, is Mikal Bridges cannot be traded this year because he extended his contract is poison pilled. So it's essentially impossible to make a real trade, including him. So I do wonder if that's something that maybe could wait until next offseason. Just because if I'm Minnesota, I'm saying I think I can do better than Ayton in picks. Like I think I could if I really want to start a rebuild and do like an Ayton's a very good player, don't get me wrong, but like I'm really swinging for the fences in terms of like young players and picks.
Yeah, and Ayton is very good, but if I am trading Cat and like fully starting over, I'd probably not want a guy who's going to be on a max contract starting next year.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what they'd look for in a cap package, but you know, I don't know.
Although one thing you can say about Ayton is that he's younger. He's 23 years old.
Yeah.
He's 23, 22, and that is closer to aligning with the Anthony Edwards timeline. Mm-hmm. And it would basically let you – I think D'Angelo Russell only has one more year on his deal after this. So it's you could just let that deal expire and not have to send out a bunch to get off of it and essentially do a rebuild with whatever picks you get. You'll probably get another high pick in this draft. You own all your picks moving forward. My question for you is, I've thought about this a lot, the Cat and Bead pairing. Like, the fact that they don't get along is a big warning sign. Maybe I've listened to Chris Vernon and Bill Simmons' podcast too much, but I care so much about like vibes and team chemistry now. And I've seen things go poorly with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and we heard whispers about them not getting along for years. That now I feel like I'm too concerned. Like on the court, I actually think it could work. Like shout out to Dave from Twitter. I forget his handle, Zaire or something, but he brought up a good point, which is essentially like Cat could basically do the Tobias thing. Like, I mean, like Cat and Tobias.
If you watch him play offense, that's what he shoots threes. Like, and
he's a power forward.
He's one of the best like big 3-point shooters of all time.
Yeah, and so he's a better shooter than Tobias, a better passer than Tobias. You could run offense through him. And defensively, he's probably just as good as Tobias defending fours. Like, I don't think that, like, if you could move on from Tobias, figure out a way to send Ben and stuff, like, would there be any world where that could possibly happen?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Morey would definitely look into it. Like, Cat requested a trade tomorrow. I think he would. The main thing I think would say is Minnesota. I think part of the reason they want Ben and Cat have a good relationship. He's a great fit with Cat. Ben and Cat are a great fit together. If Cat all of a sudden is asking out and they're going into a big rebuild, I don't know if they'd have interest in Ben. Could be a 3-team deal. But going back to your,
Think the Celtics could
definitely have interest in Ben with Jalen. That would be the way where they trade Jalen Brown.
So you think they could trade Jalen, some of their young players and picks for Cat?
Yeah, I think so. But your original point about Cat and Embiid not getting along, I mean, Embiid and Drummond seem to get along great now.
True.
Although the Cat and Embiid thing did definitely cross a line. Like, and it seemed
they physically fought.
They physically fought, and like some of those Instagram stuff the night of that happened was like brutal, like really bad. Like if you go back and look
at them.
And Embiid seemed to, if you watched the game last year when they played, Embiid was like it seemed like Embiid was trying to get along with him. Cat was like, no. If you watched
I don't think that Cat is forgetting that.
I don't think Cat would like Embiid. I think Embiid, because of everything that's happened with Cat, I think Embiid has like moved on from it. But because I don't think it's as serious to Embiid, like with all the stuff he's had.
Yeah.
But with Cat, when someone does that like to you publicly and says the things Embiid said, it wouldn't surprise me if Cat was like, no, I'm not playing with that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And also you have to factor in that like him being friends with Jimmy Butler, Cat being friends with Ben Simmons. Like yeah, absolutely.
I actually went back a couple weeks ago and like read the whole thing, and Embiid said something like, I got all the secrets on you or something. It's obvious where he got all the secrets from.
Yeah, of course. So I think if that deal were to happen, it would definitely have to be some sort of like if the Timberwolves were like, okay, we'll trade Cat to Boston and Jaylen Brown was rerouted to Philly in a situation where the Sixers were overpaying Ben Simmons plus picks to Minnesota. I could see that happening only because Minnesota might say, Jaylen Brown's great, but like we're not a contending team, and he has, 2 years left on his deal after this? Mm-hmm. Ben Simmons is locked up for the next 4 years, and we can look at it like, okay, we can remain competitive with Ben and also get a bunch of picks with it and hope that it can kind of take us to, you know, the next level eventually, and maybe trade Ben in 2 years from now when he still has a year and a half left on his deal or whatever it is. So I think that is an interesting one, especially because of the clutch connection with Anthony Edwards and Ben Simmons.
Would be weird helping the Celtics get Cat, but I'd be fine with that.
It would be, but I'm also – yeah, exactly. It's like ultimately – like, and I know this – like I understand why the Celtics wouldn't want to trade Jaylen Brown to the Sixers because he solved some issues that we have.
Yeah.
If I'm really worried, like if I'm about as high on Karl Anthony Towns' potential as any person there is, and I still would be like, if Jason Tatum and Karl Anthony Towns win a title together, they win a title together. Like that's kind of what it is. Like you can't, like you've dug your grave now, and you kind of have to fucking sit. And, like it's just, what are you going to do when the best return you can get for Ben Simmons right now is like role players? Like, you need to be able to get a star on the level of, like, maybe even better than Jaylen Brown. Like, Jaylen and Embiid doesn't even guarantee you are a contender.
It doesn't. I think optimistically, Jaylen and Embiid and Maxey, if you get Jaylen without giving up Maxey, and Maxey develops in, like, a year or two, I think that could be.
I agree.
But Jaylen and Embiid, like, right now, if they traded for him right now, this year you'd probably need some injury luck from Brooklyn.
I agree.
Milwaukee. Which Milwaukee got that last year, so it's not impossible. But.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's move on to the next team, which is, once again, another team that's just always in disarray. These small markets that just kind of can't ever really seem to get it together, and that is the New Orleans Pelicans. David Griffin apparently tried to fight Alvin Gentry. he went from playing piano to literally...
What he just lived off of having LeBron and having the Lakers as literally the only team that needed Anthony Davis. Like that's just lived off of that for years.
Insane, man. He has
like one good move.
It's crazy how this guy has now made a decade long career out of just literally being friends with LeBron. Basically, I mean that happens a lot though. A lot of players,
traded for Timofey Mozgov. LeBron loved him.
Oh my God. Like, and now he's on the hot seat in New Orleans. There's reporting that's come out and could have told you this was going to happen. I mean, part of it is not really all his fault. Zion Williamson gets hurt a lot. The team was not going to be great without him because it was kind of built around him. They tried to go out and get a lot of shooting and ultimately that team is not quite good enough without Zion to be competitive. And now, as Brian Windhorst said, they're essentially scrambling to try to replace Drew Holiday and Lonzo Ball, two players that they let go a year and 6 months ago. And obviously, Lonzo and Drew are both flourishing in their new spots. Mm-hmm. Can we figure out a way? Shout out to Patrick. Can we figure out a way to get tall Lonzo with a normal dad? Yeah. On to the New Orleans Pelicans. Is there a trade there? And do you think that New Orleans would be interested in that pairing?
I think they're definitely that's in terms of panic. Like, that's the most panicked team in the league. David Griffin could get fired any day now. Like, Zion is looking like in year three, like he might ask out. He's going to take the qualifying offer or something.
I don't think that's going to happen. It's just
I don't think he'd take the qualifying offer.
Yeah.
But I do think he could ask out in the next couple months. Like, it's really bad. I think I could definitely see David Griffin going, like, I'm going to lose my job anyway. Like, let's just trade Ingram for Simmons, just see what happens. I could see that happening.
Would you be interested in that? And also, okay, so you're interested in Brandon Ingram. Is this the same situation as the Fox situation where one team is going to say, we want Ben Simmons and picks, one team is going to say, we want Brandon Ingram and picks? What do you do in that situation?
Possibly. I don't know. I think the Pelicans are really, like, they're about 2-14. It's only going to get worse with Zion. So if they're on, like, on December 15th and they're, like, 5-30, and like David Griffin's about to get fired, like, I think he could just say, like, what do I have to lose and just do it? And
they're 2-13 right now.
2-13. Ingram.
And they play the Heat tonight.
Yeah, so 2-14. So Ingram, I've never been like huge on Ingram, but he can score, and that's what they need. He can really score. So that's something I never really considered that package until like the last couple weeks when they watched the Pelicans play. But I definitely have a lot of interest in that.
Yeah, the Brandon Ingram thing, I've been a little bit, I guess, higher on Brandon Ingram's potential than your average Sixers fan. I don't really have any resentment towards Brandon Ingram, despite the whole Kevin O'Connor thing that he tried to drum up a few years ago. And yeah, Brandon Ingram being better than Ben Simmons, and then last year Ben Simmons was better than Brandon Ingram. And it's kind of like the Paul George Jimmy Butler thing, where every 6 months it changes on which player is better. And right now, I do think that, like, okay, so Brandon Ingram, very good shooter, can shoot off the dribble, is a solid passer, good passer, horrible defender, has never really tried or cared on defense. I don't think that that's something that I would worry about all that much with the Sixers. Although you are getting to the point where you don't want to put Joel Embiid into the Rudy Gobert situation where he's the entire defense, because he's already a good chunk of the offense. So that would concern me a little bit. But ultimately, if he's the best player you can get, then yes. Yeah. Big shooting wing who his game, he's a little Tobias-y, but he's more real hooper than Tobias. Like, he's more like willing to put up shots, like willing to miss a ton of shots. And I could see him maybe being like not as good as Chris Middleton, but like our version of Chris Middleton for the, like, Bucks.
Offensively, he could be.
Yeah. Defensively, you know, he's a great defender.
Offensively, I could see that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I do worry a little bit about the Tobias and Ingram overlap, but that's something that you just kind of have to live with. There's not a perfect trade out there. And I do think that Ingram might be a guy that the Sixers could look at and say, look, we get this guy with Joel Embiid. Defensively, like, he's made an all-star team before, regardless of whether you think that was like a legit all-star team or not. He averages 25 points a game. The thing is, everyone always says he's been on bad teams, and like, yeah, we don't know whether he's gonna, like, he could fold in the playoffs or whatever it is. But if you look at like the fact that, like, outside of like that stretch that he had with LeBron in LA when they were actually pretty good.
Yeah,
he has always been on pretty rat teams. Like, and then you could say, yes, they underperformed last year with Zion, but like, I think that Embiid at this point is obviously better than where Zion is in his career. And you're just hoping that Ingram can kind of be that secondary creator, that guy that maybe can close games. Although people say that he has similar issues. I don't watch a ton of Pelicans games. People say he has similar issues to Tobias in terms of processing the game. And that is something that might limit his upside on both sides of the ball from defense and an offensive perspective. But this, once again, like, if you basically just get Embiid and a bunch of perimeter players, like, I think that the offense could be pretty unstoppable, right?
Yeah. And that's what I – like, they have the best offense in the league when everyone was healthy with Embiid and Seth Curry and George Niang. So I think like you said, there's a lot of issues with Ingram, obviously, or – but, like, any trade you make, there's going to be a lot of things where it's like, you know, that you're, there's going to be a lot of things that – you're not comfortable with.
Yep.
The Dame thing's not going to happen. That's really the only thing that was like this perfect thing, this perfect trade that was
holding out for. Yeah. Yeah. So, and even he is washed now. So,
but yeah, with Ingram. So any, so like I'm more comfortable with something like, you know, hey, he, the Tobias fit, I'm not sure about the Tobias fit. You know, he doesn't process the game well. I can live with that compared to what we're currently doing where it's like,
yeah,
maybe Tyrese Halliburton, but yeah. So it's definitely something where I just do it and just, I just do it.
Figure it out later. Yeah. I mean, he's Ingram still, you know, he is on a max deal, which is not great, but at the same time, he's still 24 years old, just turned 24. I think that he might, in the right context, could be a high level player on a playoff team. Like I kind of like this trade a little bit more than I thought that I would have like six months ago. Now that we're in the situation that we're in,
6 months ago, I never would have done considered a Simmons for Ingram or like Ingram in general. But like, I really just want someone who can just score.
Yeah,
and like real hooper. And Ingram is like, he can just score. Like at the end of the last 5 minutes, you can just like, dude, if there's last possession, you're down by one, can you just tell him to go get it? Go get us a bucket. And he.
And how many guys would you have at that point that you could realistically rely on? Like you could get into a situation where you have Seth Curry, Maxey, Ingram, Tobias, and Embiid on the floor for the final offensive possession of a game. And like, you know, all those guys individually might not be elite one-on-one scorers, but all five of them on the court at the same time would be a realistic threat from any position to score. So,
yeah,
that's one thing just from New Orleans perspective. Someone brought this up. Shout out to Mo Square on Twitter. He brought this up. Fred Vincent is the shooting coach for the New Orleans Pelicans. Yeah. He fixed Brandon Ingram's shot. He fixed Lonzo Ball's shot. If there's one guy in the NBA that can fix Ben Simmons' shot, it is Fred Vincent. And I don't think that that would ever happen, but I do think that it could be his greatest challenge, as Mo said on Twitter. Yeah, and that could be why New Orleans could be interested.
If Simmons goes somewhere and like fixes a shot and becomes like the next LeBron, like we all thought, like, whatever, it happens.
I don't care. Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
It's similar to the Fultz thing where everyone was like, well, you never know. What if he comes back to bite you? Like, I don't care. It wasn't going to happen here. I don't care.
Exactly. It's the Wentz thing. You just got to move on. Like, just get what you can get. And honestly, we all said that at the time and we got, oh, Jonathan Simmons in a first round pick. Well, that first round pick turned into Tyrese Maxey, who will probably end up having a better NBA career than Markelle Fultz, so it's worth
probably
the risk.
It's one of the best trades they've made over the last like 5 years, which is crazy.
Yeah, shout out Elton Brand, dude, fucking getting it done at the deadline. Yeah. All right, so let's move on from New Orleans. Those bozos. So they'll be relocated to the Pacific Northwest in a few years anyway. Yeah. So we can talk about the other team for the Pacific Northwest, which is the Portland Trailblazers. So the Trailblazers have been kind of up and down so far this year. Dame specifically has been not great to start the year. His shooting has been very off. It seems like he might be battling through some injuries. They are 7-8 currently, which is fine, but ultimately, after what happened with firing the coach and Neil Olshey going through what he's going through right now and bringing in someone else and Dame maybe asking out and all that stuff, you would hope that you got off to a better start. So what do you think of the Trailblazer situation? I obviously think we both think that Dame is not asking out this season. Do you think that there is any sort of package based around CJ McCollum that they would give into around the deadline?
I don't think so. I think at this point, Dame is like just set where he is, and they're not going to screw with that. So, if Dame once goes to them, it's like, I want Ben Simmons, then they'll do it. But
yeah,
like Dame is fine just winning 45 games every year and, you know, losing the first round, and they're fine with that because they're not going to trade Dame Lillard if that's, they're fine with that for a couple more years. And the upside to a Ben thing is Ben and Dame will be interesting together, but I just don't think Portland would be willing to do that in season, especially because CJ is playing very well right now. So I don't think they're going to screw with that right now.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. The fact that Chauncey Billups has said that he, you know, wants to mess around with the rotation. Like, I think the fact that, like, the one trade I would be interested in is, and this is something that I brought up before the season, but I think I would change it a little bit now. But if Damian Lillard said, go get me Ben Simmons, and the Portland Trailblazers were like, okay, this is going to be, like, our shot to preserve the Dame era. Because, like, you could keep doing the CJ and Dame thing for eternity, and it will never, ever work. Ever. Mm-hmm. And I think that the team could be decent, and like I was a little bit higher on them coming into the year than most people, and maybe that is proven to be wrong. But I think that like ultimately that's never going to win if your goal is to win a championship. Like Dame said in the media the other day, oh, we just have to do with like what the Suns did.
Yeah, and it's very clear that like whenever they had that meeting in the offseason with like Billups and Dame and Olshey, it's very clear they told him, like, look at the Suns, man. Look what they do. He keeps hitting on the Suns thing. And he has, like, these two or three talking points that he keeps hitting on. It's the Suns, it's Dirk and Giannis, and it's, like, I'm loyal. So it's clear he went into that meeting, and they hit on, like, we can be like the Suns, man. Look what they had. And you want to be like Giannis, right? Yeah,
it's very clear. Which is, like, Damian Lillard's a great player. He's not Dirk Nowitzki. He's not Giannis. Especially,
like, you know.
At this point in his career, like –
he never was, but like, especially.
Yeah. Like, yeah. No, absolutely. Like, and also keep in mind that Giannis is like 6 years younger than him and has already been the best player on a title team. And by the way, the Phoenix Suns, like, as being like this example, and like, I knew this was going to happen after the Hawks and the Suns had their success last year, but like, can we also factor in that like Kawhi Leonard tore his ACL and like Jamal Murray tore his ACL and. Yeah. All of these teams, Anthony Davis wasn't healthy and LeBron James wasn't fully healthy. Like, if the West was the West last year, the Suns probably don't win the West. And we're not even having any sort of.
Yeah, they lose in the first round if AD doesn't get hurt, probably.
Or maybe the second or third. Like, the point is that they needed historical luck to even get to the finals. And then when they finally face a somewhat healthy team, they lost. So even if Dame got all those breaks, like the Trailblazers just like there's like Chris Paul and Devin Booker's skill sets complement each other. CJ McCollum's and Damian Lillard's do not complement each other. You can put as many good role players as you want around them, and they're never winning a title as the best two players on a team. Like, it's just not going to happen. And the thing that I kind of want to go back to is the fact that like Robert Covington's deal is about to expire, and Covington has kind of fallen out of favor there, but like he's not playing as many minutes. They're trying to use him as like an on-ball stopper, which has never been his role. He's been more of that Danny Green off-ball help defender, team defender type guy. So they're misusing him.
Did you see Billups had a quote the other day, like something like Cov's got to be better on-ball or something. He's got to be our stopper.
He's got to be Mikal Bridges.
Have you ever watched Robert Covington play before? What are you talking about?
He's never been that guy. And like that's not like he's a positive defender because he does all the other stuff. And
unfortunately, he's not the same guy he was when he was here.
No.
He's definitely fallen off a bit because of the knee stuff. I remember when he got traded, like a couple people were saying like his knees were like bad. And I was surprised by that because it didn't seem like there was a lot going on there. But clearly it has because he's not the same guy. It sucks, but he's not.
he's not the same guy, but also we have another wing who's in the same mold as him, and Danny Green, who's also not the same guy. And if there was any sort of trade that could happen, I think that a Covington and CJ plus maybe a pick or two for Ben and Danny Green could be something that would be interesting to the Sixers. Because before the season, I was like, well, you'd have to trade Seth because Seth and CJ can't play together. But the more I think about it, the more I'm just like, we just have to outscore teams. Like that is what this offense has done this year. And like, if you could get away with playing CJ and Seth together some, and then you have Maxey as your third guard or Seth as your third guard, then that's a little bit more complimentary with Maxey taking this leap.
Yeah.
And you could kind of figure that out, although your defense would definitely be not good.
Yeah. To me, the CJ thing is probably right now, realistically, like the best package. I said that for a while. That's the best package they could get. But I think the Blazers are just content being like the sixth seed and not competing for a title. And Dame's going to stay there and he'll be their Dirk or Giannis, even if he's not going to win. He'll be their Dirk or Giannis, where he'll be a Blazer for life and he'll be like Iverson is here. And I don't blame them for being fine with that. Like, I get it. But,
yeah,
you know, I don't think when it comes to like a CJ trade, I think some people look at it too rationally where they're like, well, they're not going to win, so why wouldn't they do it? It's like, I don't think that's their focus. Like, we're not going to win a championship. I don't think the Blazers are focused on winning a championship with Dame Lillard. I think they're focused.
Most teams are just focused on like competing.
Yeah. And I think they're focused on having Dame Lillard here for the rest of his career. And if they luck their way into contention, then so be it. I don't think they're like, we got to compete. We got to win a championship.
Yep. And also worth noting that Daryl Morey has basically been not interested in that package from the jump. He asked for crazy CJ. I think that and this is something that you brought up, I think, one of the times you were on the podcast, which is like, you look at Seth Curry and you go, wow, Seth Curry's been having a career season with Joel Embiid. He'd start when Joel Embiid plays. Last year, he did the same thing. And it's like, he played great in the playoffs, and it's like, what would that do for CJ McCollum's game? Like, I watched the Blazers the other night, and CJ once again bailed them out with some big shots at the end of that game when Dame went cold from the field against the Raptors. Yeah. And that's something that we did not have other than Maxey, like with like two minutes left in the game. Like, we just needed someone who could close that Raptors game. And I do think that like of the guys we've talked about, I think CJ and Ingram would be the closest that you can get to that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like, I would have obviously had the Dame thing, but I would have traded Ben for McCollum in a heartbeat in like August after the Dame thing wasn't going to happen. And I'm surprised that Daryl feels differently there, because I thought that McCollum would be similar to the guy he'd like he's going to come here, play with Embiid, he'll take his game to the next level. I like at the beginning of the offseason, I thought like a lot of people were saying McCollum's not a Daryl guy, and I completely disagreed. I thought he was a Daryl guy. So I'm honestly, maybe it would be different now if it was offered, but I am surprised that that's not something that he was really targeting from the get-go.
I still think that's ultimately the most likely trade to happen. Like, if there is a Ben Simmons trade out there, and then nothing changes between now and the deadline, like there isn't like a massive splash or someone asking out or whatever it is, I still think that CJ McCollum is the most likely, just because of everything you just said, and the fact that like both teams like just need to shake something up and like need to have some sort of injection into their team.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say is that everyone is talking about like Portland, they have a bad record or whatever, but the way Portland has gone this year when it comes to a Ben trade is probably the worst it could be, because McCollum has been like all-star so far.
Yeah.
Dame has been like bad. Like,
yeah.
So Dame's not going to ask out, cause it's like his fault. Like, he's not going to be like, they're not doing it done around me. He's going to be like, I'm averaging 18 a game.
Yeah.
And McCollum playing the way he is, I don't think they're going to trade McCollum. So,
and the rest of and also he could, you know, essentially they could look at it like, well, once Dame gets back to his normal self, and then the rest of the team. Like that, like they could say, look,
the Blazers panic move had to be like, I think in my opinion, had to be like McCollum didn't play well, or it was Dame and the rest of the roster wasn't meshing, but it's really just, it's Dame. Because Dame's not playing well. So they're not going to panic, because Dame will get back to Dame at some point, and then they're going to tell themselves, well, when that happens, we'll be right there.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I also just want to throw out there that I'm actively rooting against the Portland Trailblazers, and it has nothing to do with it has nothing to do with CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard or anything like that. I'm just generally annoyed by this whole thing, and I wish them nothing but the worst.
I was over it in like August. It was just forget it. We get it. You're not asking out. We get Dame. We get it. You're not asking out. You're loyal. We get it. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's
okay. And now he's going on his apology tour now. Like, he got canceled and he's like, just
so fun. Like, we all know that at some point this offseason you were like very close to asking out. It's okay. You didn't. We get it. It's fine.
So Henry Abbott killed the process is what you're saying.
He definitely did. He definitely was going to ask out. I will say that for 50 years, he was going to ask out, and Henry Abbott had to write the article, and he was like, well, now I don't control the narrative. I can't ask out now.
He's like, okay, I'm going to be first on this, and I wanted to make it like some sentimental thing.
If you remember that day, like, there was stuff that he was meeting with Billups and Olshey, and like the rumor was he was going to ask out.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, nothing happened. And like, it was very clear. It looked like it was done. It looked like he was already asking out, and then nothing happened. So I swear, like, he was going to ask out.
Okay, so I guess my thing is, like, Daryl Morey doesn't operate the way that he does if he doesn't think that Damian Lillard is going to ask out.
Morey definitely genuinely thought he was asking out. Like, he thought it was. Like, not like a, well, it might happen. No, he definitely thought it was going to happen.
Everyone around the league thought it was going to happen. Like, yeah. That's like
so that's where,
legit. Like that's
people want to act like it was never, it was like this long shot. It was, if you want to take yourself back to whenever that was, it was like right before they left for the Olympics, like late July. Everyone thought he was asking out. Like, it felt done.
And also, like, of all the stars, he was the most likely. Like, of everyone that was rumored this summer, like, he was more likely to be able to get out than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He was more likely to get out than Bradley Beal. Like, he absolutely was on his way out.
Yeah.
And so
I'm really shocked that he didn't. I'm not shocked because he wants to be loyal, but he closed any chance that he has of winning a title or done.
Yeah, he just wants to go on the radio and freestyle and, you know,
like, it's fine.
Hang out in cafes in Portland.
If that's what you want to do, that's fine. Just don't have to be talking about it all the time. Don't need a Chris Haynes article every week.
Oh, get ready for it. You know what? When the team continues to struggle around the deadline, we'll get another I don't care, I'm loyal article. Just wait for it. Just wait for the corniest man in the NBA to continue with this bullshit. All right, so unless he hears this, in that case, then actually don't. All right, so last two teams here, we have the San Antonio Spurs, who have also been off to a terrible start, and the Indiana Pacers, who are also not off to a great start. I don't really see – although the Pacers are getting back to 500 now. They just beat us the other night. I think that they're like two games below 500. But I don't see either of these teams being able to compete in the Ben Simmons situation. Just because reports have come out that basically Daryl Morey went to the teams like this and said, go get a guy. So go get a guy we want and then come talk to us. So the Pacers can't trade Malcolm Brogdon even if the Sixers were interested, which they already denied that they were. And then the Spurs, like, they just have a lot of either two young guys or guys that are just like not good enough, basically. Yeah.
Like, the Spurs package would be, I guess, Murray and, I don't know, Keldon Johnson. I don't know if they do that, actually.
But or Vassell. Or
Murray and Vassell or Derek White and some picks.
Yeah.
Which just doesn't do much for me. I mean, again, push comes to shove, I would do it. But I don't
see. Basically every deal you say that.
If it's like the I'm serious. If it's like the deadline day and he still hasn't been traded, I am trading him for, like, I don't care. Markelle Fultz. Like, bring Fultz back. But yeah, the Spurs and the
Kelly Olynyk.
Yeah, Kelly Olynyk. We win. What we're on a three-peat right now. If we get Kelly Olynyk as our backup. the Spurs and the Pacers, especially the Spurs. I think Morey in the offseason when he was kind of doing those, like, he asked the Spurs for, like, I think if I remember right, like six first-round picks and like Derek White, which wasn't
king.
A real offer. It wasn't even a real offer. It was like, look, I don't want to trade with you. Just don't call back. And so, yeah, the Spurs are not happening. The Pacers, the Brogdon thing would have been interesting. And but he can't be traded till the offseason now. And I don't know what the what package could be there with Brogdon off the table. I'd say Duarte looks good.
Looks I had this argument the other day with someone. Who do you think's better, Malcolm Brogdon or CJ McCollum?
CJ McCollum.
Yeah, so do I. And everyone in this that I've talked, that's what I said too. I was like, hold on, Malcolm Brogdon has like he's a good player, but he's very much in that like sub all-star tier where it's like he's always injured. Like he's
I don't understand why McCollum has a bad rep. Like I don't get it. Like people talk about McCollum. Like when you brought up trading Simmons for McCollum in the offseason, people act like you said trade Simmons for Derek White. Yeah. I don't get it. Guy averages like 30 a game.
He's good. He has literally just – he's gotten the bad rap from the years when he was a mid-range guy and he was less efficient and he was – like he was getting buckets, but that's really all he could do. But now he's a kind of a good passer and like is a lethal pull-up three-point shooter. Like I don't get it either. Like I think he's way better than Malcolm Brogdon. Like I would have him as like maybe the 35th best player in the NBA. I'd have Malcolm Brogdon as like the 45th best player.
Yeah, like I think there's a gap there. Like there's a tier. Like I think McCollum's in a higher tier than Brogdon.
Yeah, I think Brogdon's defense is also overrated due to the injuries. It's just regressed a lot. Yeah. And CJ isn't as bad of a defender as you think he is. It's because he's playing next to Damian Lillard that he looks so bad.
People think Brogdon's better than he is, and he's a good player. He's a very good player.
Yeah.
Because he went to Indiana his first year and was really good.
Yeah,
I don't know how much he averaged like 20 games, like 20.
He was also a good role player his last year with the Bucks. Yeah, and so the Malcolm Brogdon thing has never like him by himself was never really the appeal of that package for me. So now that he's off the table, you have to look at the fact that like they really only can trade like Caris LeVert, TJ Warren, like who I don't even know where the fuck TJ Warren is. I don't know. So I know. That's the thing. Yeah. Basically, I'm not interested in the Pacers or the Spurs packages unless they can figure out a way to trade. Like if they could trade Sabonis, and this is something that I brought up every time, if they could trade Sabonis to a third team and add stuff and then get a guy that we're interested in, then sure. Then let's talk.
Yeah, I honestly have no clue what Sabonis' league-wide value is. Like, no clue at all. Like, I think he makes a ton of sense for the Warriors, but the Warriors don't have anything that makes sense for us. So, unless you want Wiggins, which I don't.
Oh, well, everyone's on their Andrew Wiggins renaissance part of the year already.
He's the same. Like, he's the same always. Guy. Like, maybe a little better. Like, maybe a little better, but now he just plays with Steph Curry and Draymond Green instead of whatever he was playing with Minnesota.
And he's hitting open threes, which like I've said it, like Andrew Wiggins probably has the easiest job in America now.
He does. Like so then when Clay comes back, it'll be even easier. Now it's like I said this a couple years ago when he got traded. Like Andrew Wiggins' trade value. Andrew Wiggins went from the worst contract in the league to one of the most underrated players here simply by playing on a Warriors jersey.
Like, yep. And that will continue to happen for I had people in the Discord, shout out to the Discord that we all lose our minds in there. But people in the Discord talking about how he's better than Tobias, and I was just like, and then Spike on Twitter saying he's better than Ben. I was like, all right, I gotta go. Yes, he's
better than Ben. I don't like Ben.
But I mean, you know, Spike plays it up a little bit. He likes to mess with people, but
yeah,
I do think he genuinely thinks.
I don't think people watch Wiggins because he plays at like midnight. He's the same guy. He'll score 20 points on 15 shots.
He will be. He will always be Andrew Wiggins. And he's the most perfectly average, above average player in the NBA to me.
Yeah. What Wiggins will do is you'll forget he's even playing. Right? You'll forget Wiggins exists. And then he'll have like three straight possessions where he hits a three, he goes in the lane, gets an N1, and then hits another three. And it's like, oh my God.
That's exactly what happened last night. Against the Nets. It was unbelievable. Amazing. All right. Well, let's wrap it there. We've talked plenty about these teams, and I appreciate you coming on again, dude. And we'll have to do it again sometime soon.
No problem.
Peace.